Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Turn your iPhone into a mobile photography rig. Get a better camera app before the next iPhone comes out. And carry a backup of your photos wherever you go, right on your keychain. All that and so much more coming up on iOS Today. This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code iOS Today to save 20% off any order. Welcome to iOS Today. This is the show where we talk about all things iOS's, all the iOS's. Well, we'll talk about iOS 11. That's the only iOS that matters right now. But we'll also talk about the devices, your Apple Watch, your iPhone, your iPad, maybe even some Apple TV. You never know. And some accessories. Leo Laporte is on vacation. I am super excited to welcome Stephen Hackett of Relay FM and 512 Pixels. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's an exciting day with new iOS. It's a real honor.
It is, yes. Yeah, we invited you here because we wanted you to tell us what you think of iOS 11. You already have it because you just put it on all your devices without thinking twice. You didn't care. Just threw caution to the wind. So you have it. I have it on my iPad, but not yet on my iPhone. It hasn't come to me yet. We're excited, and we've got some of your favorites that we're going to talk about, your favorite products, your favorite apps, and then you agreed to answer a few questions for us as well.
Yeah.
So before we get started, with those of you who don't know Stephen yet, who don't listen to his podcast, who don't read his blog, tell us a little bit about your Apple background, your Apple journalism background.
Yeah, so went to journalism school, and I met the Mac for the first time, and I was really excited that I could have an idea and like the computer, the Mac would let me make that idea into a real thing. And I've kind of been chasing that ever since. So I'm the co-founder of the Relay FM podcast network, do a bunch of shows there. My Apple show is called Connected. And then I've been writing at 512 Pixels now for 9 years. The anniversary was last week, which is just crazy to me. The Mac is like home base for me. I'm kind of Mac first and Mac centric, but every year, new iPads, new iOS builds, as it catches up with the Mac and in some ways surpasses it, it's really exciting to kind of live in both worlds now. It's a great time to be an Apple nerd. It really is.
And it was just about a year. We're coming up on the year anniversary when you your name became synonymous with the new iPhone. Was it a weird noise? Was it the hiss?
Yeah. Yeah, Hissgate started in my office. I had an iPhone 7 Plus that made this weird noise. I recorded it and put it on YouTube in like 10 minutes. Like it was a super terrible recording, and it did like over 1.5 million views. Not really what I expected of that story, but yeah, that anniversary is this week too. So I can't outrun that. But it was quite a week for me last year.
Yeah, we're not going to let you forget it. But yeah, maybe there'll be something. Well, you're not getting the iPhone 8. You're waiting for the 10.
I am, yeah.
I will be listening closely to my iPhone 8 when it comes on Friday to make sure there's no...
There you go. I'm happy to pass the Hissgate mantle to you if you
okay.
want it.
So. Thank you. All right, well, let's get started with some of your favorite things. Studio Neat is a little company that we both are fans of, and they do a podcast on your network. And this is the Studio Neat... what is it called? The Glyph. But let's talk about your products first. The Glyph. Tell us what the Glyph is and how you use it.
Yes, the Glyph is a tripod mount for the iPhone. Studio Neat's made several of these over the years. The newest one is super adjustable. So like the old one, maybe you had to take your phone out of the case, or if the iPhone changed size, the Glyph wouldn't fit it very well. But the new one is super adjustable. So you could take your iPhone out and put a Plus in it, or put a Pixel in it, or Galaxy S8, or really anything. And it's got thread, so you can put it on a regular tripod. So I do some of that in my office. I need to film something and don't want to get the big camera out. I can just thread my phone to a tripod. But what's really cool about it, the new one, is it comes with an optional like wooden handle, and it makes it really great for smooth video because the iPhone does optical image stabilization. And so the video is already really smooth. And with a handle, you can really make really nice movements and keep everything nice and neat. And I just love it. It breaks down. It's super small. It's super lightweight to carry in my bag if I'm out and about. But it really ups the game as far as video on the iPhone. And it's pretty cheap. It's like $28 for the Glyph. I think if you do the full kit with the hand grip and everything, it's like $60. But the video I can get out of it is so impressive. I was more than happy to give them more of my money.
So do you have one there in your studio? Do you have it there?
I do. Embarrassingly, it's in the cabinet behind me, okay. Not where I can grab it easily. But
that's okay.
The adjustment's really easy to do. It uses this big latch. So you're not like fiddling with screws and like you don't need tools to adjust it. And the hand grip is really comfortable. It comes with a wrist, like a loop. So like you can attach it to your wrist. So you don't have to worry about dropping your phone and Glyph over the side of a cliff or something. You can have it safe and secure on your wrist. It's all super well thought out.
So Glyph, G-L-I-F, if you're just listening. Mm-hmm. And this is the Studio Neat canopy that I have that I've shown on the show before, but I'll show it again. I have the Apple Magic keyboard here and just rest. Oop. As you can see, it plays a little bit of whatever is in your music library. That was Little Hamilton that was playing, unless you just turn it off like that. Have you noticed that, Stephen, that it will press the play button on your keyboard when you close it up if you don't turn it off?
Yeah, because iOS has all those keyboard shortcuts, mm-hmm. and that keyboard is just Bluetooth. So it's not like the smart keyboard where if you unhook it, it's disconnected. You kind of have to be mindful. Yeah. You got to turn that thing off, or you pull your iPad out and it's been typing into a text document for you in your backpack. No one wants that.
Yes. So I really like that. I think it's pretty cheap too. It's definitely cheaper with the Magic Keyboard and the Studio Neat Canopy is cheaper together than getting one of the smart keyboards. But again, mm-hmm. it doesn't work with the smart canopy. So, all right. Are you just an amateur photographer or do you... are you a semi-pro photographer, Stephen?
I think I'm pretty squarely in like the prosumer space. I take a lot of product photography for the blog, but I'm not going out and like shooting weddings on weekends. I can't think of anything worse, honestly. So I've got some nice equipment, but I mean the adage is true that the best camera you have is the one that's with you. And I don't always take out my big Sony, A7 R2 to walk the kids to the park. And it's nice to have the phone just in my pocket ready to go.
But you use a special camera app, the Obscura camera app. Tell us about
that. I do. Yeah, so the built-in camera app is great, and it's super fast, and it's available from the lock screen, which I just use all the time. But there are times where I feel like I'm sort of fighting the built-in app, where I'm not happy with the exposure that it's chosen or can't quite get it to do what I want. And Obscura is really nice because it comes with full manual control. So you can just open Obscura and take a picture, and it kind of does everything automatically. But if you want a certain shot or you want to change the ISO or you want to change the focus, sometimes that can be a little bit tricky in the built-in app. Sometimes it kind of fights you. Obscura makes all of that really easy. And so you can like adjust your exposure and lock it and then change your focus. You do all those things, take the picture, and then sort of the cherry on top is that Obscura has some really nice filters. And I'm not super into filters. Kind of at most I'll make a photo black and white and tweak it. But if you do want some really high quality features, Obscura has them. They're way better than something you find in Instagram or other apps because they're all very thoughtful. There's not many of them, which I actually like. There's kind of a small set, and the developers done a really good job at making some really great ones. So you can go and just take – most of the time I just take my picture, set the exposure manually, whatever I want to do, and just save it out to the camera roll. But if I do want to adjust it a little bit more with a filter set, that's in there too.
So I downloaded it and I took a picture of my doormat because I figured that if you can make a doormat pretty, then and I adjusted the is it ISO or ISO? Is it ISO?
I think people would tell you differently. I say ISO, but I could definitely be wrong.
Okay, I adjusted the ISO. I think I adjusted it too much there, and then I used some of the filters too, and I think it's really I think it looks nice. My 14-year-old daughter gets very mad at me when I use filters. She says don't, but but yeah, I mean if you can make a doormat look that pretty, I think it's a pretty good app.
It's a pretty good test, I think.
So what is the ISO intended? Like, here, I'll take a picture of my iPad. So the ISO, what is the difference between the ISO and the shutter speed?
So it kind of comes from the film world, and I'm sure there are people listening to this who are could explain it much better than I can. But it's basically film speed is kind of what you're looking at. So all these things look at how much light you're letting in, and in particular, how much noise may be in the photo. So if you have a photo, you know, taken the evening and it's sort of noisy where you get some of that grain and stuff in the sky, you can adjust the ISO or ISO and improve that to a degree. You know, nothing will make a bad situation perfect, but it just gives you more tools sort of at your fingertips, where exposure is just changing brightness, how much light is coming in. This is more about like the speed of the shot, and noise is really what you're looking at. You can increase it and maybe do better or worse at low light, but you got to make the trade-off with noise. So what's nice about Obscura, you don't have to know all of that. Like, if all you want is exposure, which is most of the time all I'm after, you don't have to worry about the rest of it. It can figure out the rest if you just change one parameter. So it's really smart, as opposed to like an old fully manual film camera. You had to set all the dials. Obscura is smart enough to say, hey, the user just wants to change one thing, kind of compensate with the rest. And that makes it really easy to make something, you know, get a quick shot off without having to worry about 400 settings.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that the best app is, you know, when you sometimes you just need a quick app and you need to scroll up. But this is pretty nice. I mean, with the 3D touch, if you could show my screen, Carson, you can get the RAW camera. Do you use the RAW? Do you shoot RAW?
I have a little bit. I need to explore that more on iOS. I mean, I shoot RAW only on my sort of big adult camera, but haven't gotten into it real deep into iOS. So that's kind of on my to-do list with iOS 11 and some of the new stuff. Like, I know Obscura's got an update coming to support some more stuff in iOS 11. And RAW photos predates that, but I need to get more into that for sure.
Awesome. It's $4.99, and you say it's worth every penny.
I think so, yeah. If you're serious about iPhone photography, it's a great way to up your game.
Awesome. All right. Well, you have another recommendation. It's for all the robocalls that we get, which are so annoying. They become even more annoying when they found my zip code, and it looks like someone calling from the school or something. Tell us about what you found to defend yourself against robocalls.
Yeah, so I had the same problem everyone else has. Lots of robocalls. When you start a business, your phone number gets put on every list imaginable. And I've definitely had the thing you're talking about, where like a phone number comes up and it's my area code. And sometimes it's even the first three digits of my mobile number. And so, yeah, I always think, oh, it's the school or there's something's happened, and you get tricked into answering. So I looked at a bunch of apps. I found Nomo Robo, which totally wins for like the best app name of all time. It's fun to say. It's a fun abbreviation. And kind of how they operate. iOS, I think it was iOS 10, added a framework where phone calls could be filtered, and it puts a little label up on the call screen that says, hey, I think this is a robocall. If that's not enough, you can have them block them all outright. But it works sort of by crowdsourcing. So they have a huge database. I opened the app this morning. It's like over 500,000 phone numbers that it knows about. But say that you get one of those calls that looks local to you, that may not be in their database yet. And with their share extension, you can add that number to the database. And there's a little drop down. You tell it why it's a spam call, and then they review it and it gets added. So everyone using this app is kind of benefiting from everyone else's input. It's $1.99 a month. I know not everyone is super in love with you know, in-app purchasing, let alone subscriptions in apps. But this thing saves me from picking up the phone some days a couple of times a day. And, you know, I'm recording all day and like it's distracting. And so I can have it just block those calls and I don't have to worry about it. There are lots of other apps like this on the App Store. One thing you have to be really careful of is the privacy policy. Some of these apps work by putting all of your phone numbers on their server. So they are, you know, request contact access, and they upload all that stuff. And that's kind of icky. Nomo Robo, they have a very clear business model. Hey, it's $2 a month. They're not selling my phone numbers to anybody. And it does a great job. And so it's been on my phone since it came out. And I really can't imagine having my iPhone ring as much as it used to. Like, this app will always be on my phone from here on out, because it makes living with a phone number livable.
I love this. Okay, so here it is. I'm getting a robocall, and then it says, it has a little red dot there and says robocaller. I'm going to
decline. Yeah, so you can have that setting, or you can tell it, hey, just block all of these altogether. That's a little more extreme. That's the one I have it on, but you definitely don't have to. It's kind of nice to see what it thinks it is before making a decision for yourself. But I haven't had it really have any false positives. You know, I haven't missed a call from my bank or, you know, something like that because they have a, you know, 1-800 number. It seems to be very intelligent about what it's doing.
And it looks like they'll send them to voicemail too. They won't just block it completely. So that's cool. And go ahead.
Yeah. So if it is a real call, right? Like say your bank fraud department gets flagged as a spam call. Well, if they leave you a voicemail, then you still have that. So you're right. It's kind of the best of both worlds. They're not completely saying, you know, you're banished, but it is giving you an out if it is a legitimate call.
Mm-hmm. And it's great that I would absolutely pay this subscription fee over giving away all the phone numbers in my contact list. Even though I'm sure we've all given them away countless times at this point,
right?
In Facebook and et cetera. So don't do that.
Yeah, and some carriers offer this as an option, and I think some carriers even offer apps similar to this. But I kind of like that this is a standalone thing that it's not associated with my AT&T account, right? It's just kind of just on my phone doing its thing.
Right. A user 800 in our chat room has a good question. You know, if you unsubscribe to a spam, often that just shows that you're a valid email address. Does that work the same way? If you decline, is that showing that you're a valid phone number?
You know, I've heard that, right? Like if you answer a robocall and then hang up on them, or you decline it, that's a signal that it's a real phone number. I'm not sure how this app would interact with that. I don't think that I've gotten more calls because I'm running this. So I don't think it's making anything worse necessarily.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to try it. So I'll let you know if it makes things worse. I don't know how things could possibly get worse at this point.
I know. It's so bad. It's so annoying.
So, okay. One more of your picks. Storm Crow for threading tweets.
Yeah.
Tell us about
that. So 2017 is the year of the Twitter thread. You know, people like me have been blogging for a decade. It's like, just write a blog post. But especially in like political Twitter and new and journalism Twitter, there's a lot of threads. And we've all seen them, right? They have the little one or the two. And like if you do them manually, you can really mess it up where they don't all interleave correctly, or you mess your numbering up. And it's sort of messy to do. And it's an addition to Twitter, right? Twitter wasn't designed to do this. So that messiness is understandable. I did see an article last week that Twitter is playing with this in their official app. So this may be coming to the official app. But if you're like me and can't stand the official Twitter app, and I've used Tweetbot for years, there's no great way to do it in Tweetbot. So this is a little standalone app. You write out your tweet thread or your tweet storm, and it's really smart about it. It counts the characters. So it tells you, hey, you know, this is going to be on the next tweet. You have replies and hashtags all in there. And when you're done, you can hit preview, and it'll show you what the tweets will look like. So it's a really nice indication, like, hey, yes, I got my line breaks right and everything. And then you just hit tweet, and it sends it to Twitter automatically for you. It takes care of all the numbering. It takes care that it's threaded. So if someone clicks the first one or the last one, they see all of the others. All that stuff that's sort of a pain manually to do, it just does for you. This sidesteps whether Twitter threads are a good idea or not. I'm not here to judge that, but if you do want to do them, it's a really like surefire way to make sure that they all stay together and that it doesn't break down.
So this is for creating your own tweet storm, not for reading someone who's done it wrong. If someone's done it wrong, you offer no help for them.
Right. This is purely creation. There's no timeline in this app. This is not a Twitter client. This is I am writing tweets, and then it structures them and sends them to Twitter for you. So it is only for publishing. There's no reading or like fixing other things. It's a very like single purpose iOS app. And I think some of the best iOS apps are like that, where they do one thing and do it really well. And Storm Crow falls in that category for me.
I feel many tweet storms coming on now. I feel like this has opened up a new world to me.
Oh no. I apologize to all your followers. It's one of those things, definitely. Like now that I have this, you know, I'll do one occasionally. You know, if we have an announcement at work or have something to say about, you know, some subject of the day, I can do it and know that my followers can read the whole thing sort of all in one coherent way, as opposed to, you know, we've all followed a thread, right? And it's like, I don't know what happened. I just totally lost it because it fell apart. This takes care of that.
Right. Well, so do you feel like more people follow you on Twitter than read your blog?
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a slightly different audience. Mm-hmm. But if I have something serious to say that's long form, I will always go to the blog. Maybe that's just because I've done it for so long. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the other night, I tweeted something about a piece of legislation. It was a couple of sentences. You know, it didn't really belong in the blog because the blog is more tech focused. And so I, you know, opened up StormCrow on my iPhone and just went to town and sent it and was done with it. Because there is a virality to tweets that, you know, it's hard to make a blog post go viral in 2017 because people just don't want to click. But if they're on Twitter and they click, they tap the first one, they see the other five or six tweets or 37 tweets, then they can kind of get it all and move on. So there's pros and cons to either way, I think.
I think it's good. I mean, I do think that we use Twitter so often these days, and there's so many things that we're talking about that really need more than 150 characters. Like, it's just
totally.
especially because we've all gotten very political about our opinions, and there's no context, and yeah. So this is good. I like this.
Yeah, it's interesting that Twitter users have like added this to Twitter, like to make Twitter do something that it didn't used to do. And I always find that sort of addition to products really interesting. Like replies were that way and hashtags, all this stuff has come from the user base of Twitter. And now it looks like the company may be adding it to their apps, which I think will be good because most people honestly aren't going to pay $3 for an app to do this. But if it's in the official app that most people use, then maybe they'll be easier to manage.
Right. It must be exciting for everyone except for the people that created StormCrow.
Yeah, you know, bespoke one-off iPhone app, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how well an app like that can do in 2017, but he got my $3.
Bespoke apps. I feel like that's a podcast that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Bespoke
there you go.
Apps. Before we move on, that's great. I love all your picks. I wanted to get your feel for iOS 11, what your favorite things are, what's frustrating you so far? What are your thoughts on this OS that comes out today?
Yeah, first and foremost, it is definitely a release that the iPad wins. You know, iOS 9 gave us sort of child's play multitasking on the iPad. iOS 11, of course, just blows that out of the water with the dock, and you can have apps that are set together. You can have, if you have an iPad Pro or some newer iPads, you can do three apps at a time. So you can do side by side and slide over, which is really nice. If you're an iPad power user or you want to become one, iOS 11 just unlocks a ton of possibilities. Things like drag and drop, where I can have a chunk of text and notes and then drag it into an email or have an email and I drag it into my to-do list, or have a picture and photos and I want to send it to somebody in iMessage. I don't have to go through the share sheet. I don't have to do like the copy and paste dance. I can just open both apps and drag it over. Totally, for me at least, has really changed the game when it comes to working on my iPad, because it makes everything so much faster and more efficient. The iPhone benefits from some of that. I think on the iPhone, you know, the drag and drop is really, it's not in between apps. It's really kind of within apps. So it's a little bit different, but the iPad gets the new design stuff with Control Center, and both of course get the Files app, which I don't know about you, but for me, Dropbox is my file system. Like there are very few things on my iMac or on my laptop that aren't in Dropbox. It's just, I have tons of shared folders with coworkers and with friends and family, and it's just where everything is. And before iOS 11, Dropbox is kind of in its own little garden. I can go in there and do stuff and come out. But with the Files app, and Dropbox has said they're going to support this, their update should be out any time now, I believe. They're going to be integrated with the Files app, which makes moving files between cloud services or sharing them or editing them in place. You know, you used to have to on iOS, you'd open a document and then you have a copy of it and you have to save it back. All those hoops are gone now because the Files app works more or less like the Finder on the Mac, where I can just open a document, make changes, close it, it saves and syncs. And all of that stuff makes working on the iPhone and especially the iPad much more feasible for someone like me who's in and out of a lot of files all day and I have a lot of shared folders all day. You know, I'm not just opening the Notes app and writing to myself. I'm collaborating, I'm sharing, and all that stuff is just way more native now. And that really, I think, will put iOS 11 on the map. Is like, this is a real productive OS for people who don't want to go through the hoops of learning something like workflow. You know, we've all known the iPad power users like Federico Viticci of Mac Stories. for a long time. And this makes that way more accessible to the masses. And I'm just super excited to see what developers do with it and what end users can do with their iPad now that they've unlocked all this extra stuff.
One thing I've been excited about on the iPhone is the feature that they talked about, I think it was at the developers conference, about how you could turn it on so that you wouldn't get, you'd be notified that you were driving, like that feature. Have you been using that on the iPhone?
I have. So if you get in a car, your phone kind of figures that out and it puts it in do not disturb mode. Thankfully, there's a setting. So I had a problem where I'd go on a bike ride and I'd ride fast enough where it would trigger this. And so I'd be in do not disturb when I was riding my bike, which I did not want. I want to be accessible if I'm on my bike. So there's a setting to say, hey, only turn this on if you pair with a car stereo. So that's how I have mine set up. And your phone goes in do not disturb. You can override it if you want. And if someone sends you a text message, they get a little reply that says, hey, I'm driving. I'll see this when I get there. Now you can turn that setting off. I actually have that setting off because I felt that was a little weird, but it has totally, like, we all do it, right? Like it's shameful. None of us should, but we all end up looking at our phones when we drive. Like that's just kind of a unwritten truth. And this, if you want to do that, you have to tell your phone you're not driving. And that is a little moment for you to realize what you're doing. And I've had it on since I put iOS 11 on my phone over the summer. And I will leave it on, and I'm excited when my family all upgrades to iOS 11, my friends upgrade to it today or this week. I think it's going to make everyone a lot safer, and I think it's great that Apple added it. You know, it's one of those features that they don't have to add, right? It doesn't make the platform inherently more valuable, but it makes it – it's another reminder that Apple really thinks about their users. And for me, I will leave it on because I think it's absolutely great.
Yeah, I mean, when they talked about this last year, when it was rumored, I guess, everyone got really upset. Like, Apple shouldn't be able to control whether I use my phone or not. When I'm driving, it's going to not work. What if I'm a passenger, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems like they really did figure a lot of these problems out. It is a personal choice. And it's true. It's just that part of our brain takes over when we see the notification. And if we can just have something come between us and texting and driving, it will be super helpful.
So you get a little notification. So if you wake up your phone, on the phone it says, hey, you're driving, and you can hit that notification and you have to tell it, I'm not driving, and then your phone is unlocked as normal. And all of the regular D&D stuff works. So if someone calls you, you know, if they're a VIP or they call that twice back-to-back setting, if you have that on, your phone will still ring, right? So if my spouse needs to get a hold of me or parent, you know, when my parents need to get a hold of me, they can still do that. But what it does is it makes it much more difficult for me to like checked Tweetbot at a stoplight, which I should not do, but we all do it.
What about changing to the next podcast if we're bored? Can we do that?
You got to tell your phone you're not driving. If you have Siri enabled, it's a little bit different. But yeah, so if you are, you know, need to change your media, you do have to tell it, hey, I'm not driving. But you know that I think is something like a reasonable trade off because it's stopping me from being distracted by my phone when I shouldn't be. But yeah, if you want to change your media, you just have to tell it, hey, I'm not driving, and you can go in and do it. The now playing control, so that lock screen widget that shows your podcast or your music, that all still works. So if you just want to skip to the next song, you can still do that and leave your phone and do not disturb. So they've balanced that pretty nicely, I think.
So do you do a lot of texting and biking? It sounds like you do, and I don't know if that's safe either.
No, I'm not sending texts, but it's especially on a bike ride, I just want to be, you know, because I may be gone longer. I don't drive hardly anywhere because my post office and grocery stores are all within a couple miles. So I'm not in my car very much. But if I'm on a bike ride, I may be on the bike for a couple of hours. And I want just to be like super accessible if my spouse needs me or a family member or something. And if something happens, you know, and I need to make a call or you know, pull over and answer somebody, I just like that step's not in the way. And that may be silly. That may just be my hangup, but I like that you can tell it, hey, only do this when I am, you know, paired with my known car. And if you're in a car, right? Like if I'm riding with my wife somewhere, and my phone thinks that I'm driving, I can tell that I'm not, tell that I'm a passenger, and it just works as normal. So I feel like they've thought through all the major use cases here. But no, I'm not Snapchatting and riding my bike. That's a recipe for disaster.
Whew. I think it's interesting that you have to tell your phone that like you're you're not driving. Like, no one wants to lie to our phones. We love these guys. Like, we just want to tell them the truth.
Yeah. I think that verbiage on that button is really purposeful. Like, I have to tell it I'm not driving. And that is a moment for me to think, oh, is what I want to do really worth the risk? And it's really changed my habits over the last couple of months that I've been running iOS 11. So I think you should totally give it a shot when you upgrade your phone. Totally worth it.
What about Apple Watch notifications? Do you still get those if you're driving?
No, because you are in Do Not Disturb mode. So your watch is not going to vibrate either if a text message comes in. So it's just like if you put your phone in Do Not Disturb in a manual setting, that the watch respects it. That works the same way with driving.
I really need that because I'm pretty good about not looking at notifications when I'm driving, but I've definitely had some instances where I have my hands on the wheel of the car and I go like this and then I look up. And
yeah.
So I'm definitely going to turn that on. So yeah. If you have iOS 11 and you have this turned on and you're in the car right now, do not lie to your iPhone. Do not tell your iPhone that you are not driving. You are driving. Do not change your media. You have to listen. We're going to take a second to thank our sponsor. So you have to listen if you're driving. And you'll want to listen because our sponsor today is Tracker. And if you are like me or any normal person in the world that has too many things in their head and too much stuff that you want to keep track of, then you are going to want to get the Tracker to keep track of your stuff. And you actually don't even have to think about it anymore. You don't have to think about losing your phone either. The Tracker is a coin-sized device, a little device that you keep on your keychain, and it helps you locate your things when you have lost them. Your phone, your wallet, even your cat or your dog can have a little tracker around his or her neck. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again. They have a new device. It's called the Tracker Pixel. With the Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You place the Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, your keys, your wallet, your cat, your dog, your snake. I haven't put one on our snake, but I've thought of it. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so you can find your items in the dark, because that's where most of my items are, in the couch cushions, under the couch. I don't want to turn on the lights, so just use my Tracker Pixel with light and find this stuff. Like I said earlier, if you lose your phone, you just press the button on your tracker and then your phone rings, even if your phone is on silent. You can locate your item if it's miles away because every tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. That means if you've left your stuff at the beach, if you've left it at the neighbor's house, if you've left it on your 10-mile bike ride like Stephen Hackett does, 10 hours or whatever many hours he's on there. If you've lost something, you can find it. If someone around you has a tracker, they will help you find it. Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. Try it. If you hate it, you can send it back. I don't think you will hate it. Go to thetracker.com, enter promo code iOS today. That way that they know that you came to them from iOS today. And also you get to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code iOS today for 20% off the tracker. And then start thinking about other stuff besides losing your stuff with the tracker. All right, let's talk about security. I know, Stephen, you're well aware of all the announcements they made about the iPhone X. I know you don't have yours on order yet because they won't let you order them yet, but you're planning on ordering an iPhone X. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the security of the Face ID? I know there's been a lot of complaints, a lot of complaining, a lot of fear, misunderstanding, doubt about it. What are your thoughts about the security in Face ID?
I mean, it really feels like right now feels like we were in that run up to Touch ID, where they announced it, but the phone's not out yet, and thumbprint readers and fingerprint readers weren't super good, and Touch ID really blew everything away. My guess is Face ID is going to be very similar. Other manufacturers have been doing this to mixed degrees of success. I trust that Apple knows what they're doing, that they want to get rid of Touch ID if Face ID wasn't up to the job. And I think they did a good job in their keynote building the case that it is secure. So they said, you know, it's not going to be tricked by pictures. They had that super creepy image of like the masks that they were like gone to Hollywood and talked to visual effects artists and trying to trick phones with masks. I would not want to be the project manager for that. You're just going to see those things every time you close your eyes. But super creepy. And they said, look, Touch ID, you know, is kind of a one in, I think, 50,000 type deal because, you know, thumbprints is only basically, you're going to run into somebody, your thumbprint is similar enough to unlock this, and that the face ID is much more secure. I think it was one in a million, because, or 10 million something. I don't remember the number, but way more secure because it is not just looking at a picture of my face. It is analyzing the structure and the way my face is sort of changing over time. It learns all that stuff. So I'm not that worried about it. You know, you're still going to have a PIN that's still required. You know, I think a lot of people use the 4-digit PIN. I have moved to the 6-digit PIN on my phone. It takes a little getting used to, but adds that extra layer of security. And so, yeah, I'm not that concerned about it. There are, I think the legitimate concern is what happens if you're in a security situation where you don't want your phone to be unlocked by somebody. And iOS 11 includes what they call SOS mode. So this is on the watch too, to a degree, where you can, on the iPhone 10, you can press and hold the sleep-wake button. On the older iPhones, you tap it 5 times, and it disables biometric unlocking. So Touch ID or Face ID will be turned off, and it requires a PIN to unlock the phone. And at least in the United States, there's some differences legally between being compelled to enter your PIN versus biometric unlocking. And so that's the way out, right? So if you're going through security, you're nervous about a situation, you can just disable it temporarily and rely on just your PIN code. And so all that for me adds up to a story that I believe from Apple, honestly, because they did such a good job with Touch ID, and they built the case that Face ID is going to be even better. And so for me, I'm totally willing to give it a shot. I mean, I'm going to be buying a phone with no Touch ID. Like, I'm going into this just like everyone else is who's going to pre-order an iPhone 10. So I think a lot of the hemming and hawing will probably just wash away over time. I don't think it's something to keep you up at night.
Well, I mean, those of us who make it our business to follow every Apple news story, every Apple rumor, every time Ming-Chi Kuo yawns, we're all listening. Do you agree with the rumors that this wasn't plan A, this is plan B, that they wanted to continue Touch ID but then couldn't get it in behind the bezel-less OLED screen? Do you believe that that's true, that this might have just been what they did when they couldn't get to Touch ID to work on the new phone?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we may never know until Phil Schiller's an old man and writes his tell-all book. We may just not know. We know that there were reports that Samsung was trying to put a touch sensor below the screen, or beneath the screen, I should say, and they were unable to do it. So on the S8s, it's on the back. Maybe Apple had a similar problem. There were lots of rumors saying so. But, you know, I do think that if Apple tried that and they couldn't do it, and Face ID was a fallback, like, they would never say that, right? Like, they never say, oh, we really want Touch ID, but we have this instead. So we'll never hear the story from Apple. But if it really is better than Touch ID as far as the security standpoint and the ease of use, then I don't think it matters that Touch ID is fading away if it really is better. Now, if we get a couple months into this new phone and we're all having trouble unlocking our phones, or it's really easy to, you know, trick, then yeah, like, that's a conversation worth having. But at this point, I don't think it really matters as long as it is a better solution.
So what do you think about the SKU issue? That's another thing that's come out of the event. There's too many SKUs, there's too many phones, it's too complicated. There's the 8, there's the 10. You know, we know the difference between those, but does the average person know? And there's this big, you know, hemming and hawing about how expensive the iPhone 10 is, but it's really not that much more expensive than the iPhone 8. Allison Sheridan, who runs Podfeet, she made this comparison, and we have that link, Carson. She got out her Excel, and I don't know that this is any less complicated. I think it's more complicated. But what do you think about so many iPhone choices, the SKU creep or whatever you want to call it? How do you feel about that?
I mean, this has been like Tim Cook, Apple, like their playbook. Apple seemingly is unable or unwilling to release a new phone at $400. And so the way they sell a $400 phone is to sell you one that's a couple years old. And so the 6S is still around at those lower price points. And the SE is even cheaper. The SE is crazy cheap. I don't necessarily have a problem with it because there are markets for these phones. And if this allows somebody to buy an iPhone, then that's a win for Apple and a win for the ecosystem. Where I feel a little weird about it is that, and this is probably just a 2017 thing, is that the 8 and the 10, like that friction, that sibling rivalry between those two phones, where the 8 and 8 Plus are great phones. If you have a 6 or a 6S, you should totally buy the 8. Like for those people who upgrade every 2 or 3 years, the 8's an incredible phone. It has most of the goodness of the 10 in it. Same processor, almost the same camera system, wireless charging, a bunch of the goodies from the 10 are in the 8. And so I don't think the 8 is like an afterthought. I don't think it should be an afterthought. It's a solid phone. Those reviews are out today, and a lot of those reviewers are like, it's fine, but the 10 is coming. It's like, well, I see that, right? And I'm excited about the 10, but I'm an enthusiast. The 10 is an enthusiast device, maybe like the Note 8 is, where the 8 and 8 Plus, I think, are still the mainstream devices. And so, yeah, so Apple keeping old phones around to hit a price point, I'm fine with it. I think there's a little confusion at the high end this year, but I think that confusion is totally temporary. Maybe next year we'll see the same thing where we see the 8S and 8S Plus and the iPhone XS. I don't know. They have a naming problem now. But I think ultimately we'll be back in the situation we were in last year where you have the high-end phone, and if you want something a little bit cheaper, you can get last year's phone. And if you want something really cheap, get a phone that's 2 years old. And all these phones are so good that a 6S is still a totally viable product today. And, you know, I might not want it because I'm an enthusiast, but if you're walking into a store with $450 in your pocket to buy a phone, it's a great choice compared to what's else is on the market at $450.
Yeah. I mean, one of my 12-year-olds wanted to buy his own phone. He didn't want any leftovers. And so, yeah, he saved the money and bought himself an SE. You know, he's paying it off. And so, yeah, it's great. It's a great opportunity. He has an iPhone and he's excited about it. And it's much better than his brother's 6, which he got as a hand-me-down. Yeah. It looks the same, but it just, yeah, it works much better. So, yeah, and my husband is a caveman. And so he has the iPhone 5C. The C stands for caveman.
It does.
He actually has to get rid of it now because it won't get iOS 11.
Yeah.
So he's trying to figure out if what he's gonna do next. I think it'll probably be the SE too because he just doesn't. It also only has 8 gigs of memory, which is
That's rough. The SE is great, and there's lots of reports that the SE has sold way better than Apple thought. I expect that we'll see an updated SE this fall. You know, the SE now has the 6S guts in it. But maybe this spring we see one with the 7's guts in it. My wife has an SE because she didn't want a bigger form factor. You know, I bought her an iPhone 6S, I guess, and she didn't like the bigger screen. It was uncomfortable for her. She wanted something small again. And so she loves the SE. And so at least there'll be peace in my household as long as they keep updating that product. And I think they will. I think there's enough people who are really passionate about the SE that Apple wants to keep them happy. Mm-hmm.
Well, now we have to get to the Apple Watch, the Watch Series 3 with cellular, which is causing a lot of questions. Did you order a new watch?
I did. So, yeah, I went cellular. I mentioned earlier, like if I go for a run or go for a bike ride, I would like to leave my phone behind because I want to be accessible. I'm excited about the cellular watch. I think that it, kind of like the iPhone 10, this feels like the watch they kind of always wanted to build, and now they're able to. And it blows my mind from like a tech perspective that they've got LTE in this thing that's the same size as the one that I'm wearing now. Like it seems incredible. So yeah, I'm excited about picking mine up on Friday.
And so, did you already talk to your provider? Like, did you have a confusing conversation with them? I've gotten lots of emails about people saying they're charging $20, they're charging $10. I have to come up with a new plan. Have you had any issues with that, or have you not talked to your provider yet?
I looked on, so I'm on AT&T. I looked on their website. It seems like I'll be able to add it to my plan. I think it's $10 a month, and they had some special for the first several months. But I'm on a pretty modern plan. Like, I'm not holding on to an old unlimited data plan, right? Like, I've got whatever it is, 6 or 8 gigs between two phones, you know, a modern plan. We changed our plan with AT&T maybe a year ago. So it seems like it's going to be pretty seamless for me. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of confusion. I think there was that whole T-Mobile thing we can talk about, but it seems weird because the iPad is so easy. You put a SIM in it, or has the Apple SIM in it, honestly, and you just say, hey, I'm on AT&T. This is how much data I want. I'm going to pay you this amount of money. And like, the iPad is so simple from the cellular perspective. And I was really hoping the watch would be that way, but it seems like it's turning out that maybe it's a little more complicated for some people.
Why is it? I mean, why is it more than just the cell companies trying to get as much money as possible? I know you mentioned the T-Mobile thing. They were going to charge $20 a month, yeah. Or else they were going to throttle your data, but then they backtracked on that. Is it more than them just wanting more money?
I don't know. I don't know if it, because the cellular watch shares your phone number. So if my phone is at home and I'm at the grocery store and you were to text me, I would still get it because my phone number is associated with both devices. So I don't know if that's the difference, because the iPad, that's not true. The iPad is just data. It's not really cellular stuff. So maybe that's the difference. I mean, you can't write off that cellular companies are terrible. Like, if that's the only reason, I totally buy it because they're awful. But maybe there's something there with the phone number thing being adding a level of complexity. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I didn't think people are getting a lot of, from the emails I've gotten, I got an email from Adam who said he doesn't want to, he wants the cellular watch, but he doesn't want to hook it up to his cellular network. Like, have you heard about anything like that? Because what his point is, I don't want to hook it up to my phone now, but I might in the future, and then I don't want to buy the Apple Watch 3 without cellular and then have to buy another watch. Have you heard about whether people have to connect it to cellular or not?
Yeah. My understanding is, at this point, from talking to some people who've had some hands-on time, is that when you set up a cellular watch, there's a setup screen that says basically, you know, do you want to connect this to your cell phone plan? It knows about your cell phone plan because of your phone. And there's an option to do that later. And so at this point, my understanding is you can buy a cellular watch and not enable the cellular until you're on down the road. So I think that's a totally reasonable use case, right? Like, I want to do it at some point, but I don't want to do it now. It seems like you'll be able to do that. I don't think you're handcuffed to a cell plan the second you activate that watch.
And like I said earlier, I like to follow every time Ming-Chi Kuo says anything. And they said that they estimate that 80 to 90% of all the Apple Watches pre-orders sold were the Series 3 with cellular. Does that surprise you?
That's a high number. But, you know, thinking about it, people I've talked to on Twitter or like other nerds, people are really excited about it. And I think if you have a Series 1 or 2, I mean, the 3 is going to be faster, but LTE is really the difference, right? Like, now, if you have an original, like an OG Apple Watch, like, you should totally buy a 3 regardless of cellular or not, because I'm sure your battery's failing and it's just old and clunky. Mm-hmm. But the Series 1 and 2 are so good. I think a lot of people would only upgrade because of the LTE. Like for me, that's true for me. Like, I have a Series 2 and I wasn't going to upgrade unless there was a cellular model, you know, just a little bit faster Apple Watch. It would be nice, but I just bought this thing a year ago, so I was going to skip a generation. But then I saw that they did an LTE one and couldn't help myself. So those numbers are high, but I think I buy it. I think that's probably accurate.
And I guess my first thought was isn't Apple worried that people won't be interested in iPhones anymore? But you still have to own an iPhone. You just don't have to.
Right.
You can just leave it at home. I mean, I am interested in how many days I could leave my iPhone, how far away I could be from my iPhone and still be fine. I'm tired of being tethered to this thing all the time.
Yeah. I think it really will come down to what sort of apps that you need to have on the go. So like iMessage and stuff, of course, works great. Phone calls work great. But say like you use something like Slack heavily, which we do at Relay FM, like the whole company's in Slack. And so I am in Slack all the time. And there, watchOS app leaves a little bit to be desired. And so, you know, is that the factor for me? Is that the tipping point where like, oh, I really need to be available to work, so I'm going to have to take my phone? So everyone may have that app that sort of is the breaking point. But I do hope that this is, incentive for app developers on the watch to really push with watchOS 4 and really make their apps as fast and as capable as they can, because I think more and more people are going to be like what you said, like, I would like to go for a walk and just leave my phone at home, or, you know, I can spend some time with my family with my phone in the bedroom but still be available. And so I think these apps on the watch are getting ready to be a lot more important to a lot of people who are really using the watch as a standalone device for the first time. And so I'm hoping that we'll see some evolution there on the app side.
Yeah, I mean, the bedroom thing that already works, right? I mean, unless you're not, if you're on the same Wi-Fi network, you can be far away. But yeah, I don't, because unless you're a runner or a biker or, you know, a walker, I can't imagine what you would use it for regularly besides leaving your phone at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the watch's strong point is fitness notifications, and LTE makes both of those things better. But yeah, I mean, if you're the type of person that's always going to have your phone on you, or, you know, I've got a friend who only wears his Apple Watch to work. He gets home and he takes it off, and his phone and watch are always on the same Wi-Fi network. So for him, it's not a big upgrade, right? It's not giving him anything that he doesn't already have, because he only uses it when he's in the office. So if you're that sort of user, yeah, it, you know, maybe you're in that 10 to 20% that the LTE is not important. But I think so many people use them for fitness that those people have really been craving this. And I know I have been, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, because I used to strap my iPhone to, you know, an armband or a wrist.
Yeah.
The
worst.
This is too big. It's just embarrassing.
If you have a Plus and the wind comes by, it's going to blow you over. Like, it's not a good situation. So yeah, absolutely. That's something that I think a lot of people who run or bike or, you know, are outdoors, right? Like, I'm looking forward to, as silly as it is, just doing yard work, right? Like cutting the grass or working in the garden. Like, even that sort of thing will be nice to be able to leave my phone inside, and, you know, because the Wi-Fi may be spotty, and just be accessible.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's like a gym membership. It's like, oh, I'm going to get this so that I run or bike or do more exercise.
Yeah.
So
it's just staring at you, reminding you to go outside.
So it's aspirational.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
All right. Richard asks about wireless charging. I ordered my charging pad. I'm super excited about getting it. And Richard asks, is it possible to charge the new iPhone 8 while the phone is in the case? And I'm assuming Richard means wirelessly charge it.
Right.
Most cases include the hole for the lightning charger. Have you seen a definitive answer about this?
I've read some stuff about wireless charging on Android devices. They've had it a long time. Apple's playing catch up here. And it seems like as long as your case is thin and as long as it's made of something that's not metal, you should be fine. So if you have a leather silicone case, even I think if you have something like an OtterBox, it was still plastic and rubbery, you should be fine. You know, I don't think many people are carrying devices. Belkin says it's up to 3 millimeters. I mean, yeah, if you've got some sort of like bomb-proof army grade phone case, you may have a problem with it. But I think most people who just slap their phone in, you know, Apple's leather case or, you know, a little silicon gel thing to make it sticky, you know, make it less slippery, you're going to be totally fine. But yeah, if you have, you know, something real hardcore, you know, maybe check with the manufacturer. I would imagine, I haven't looked, but I'd imagine that OtterBox maybe even has a FAQ on this somewhere, because they sell a lot of Android cases as well. But I think most people will be probably just fine.
And so it's Qi charging, so it should ideally work with any Qi charging base at this point. You don't have to buy the two, the Mophie and the Belkin, that Apple offers you when you're buying the phone, right?
Right, and that's super exciting that Apple went and used an open standard like crazy, right? Like, what a world. So these chargers are showing up in cars, and they're showing up in hotel rooms. And yeah, so if you already have one, like, so on either side of my iMac here, I have IKEA lamps. And IKEA sells a lamp that the base of it has one of these charging pads in it, which, like, I'm just not going to lie, I'm totally going to buy one for my nightstand because I would like wireless charging at night, and I need a lamp next to my bed. I can 2 birds with 1 stone. And so this is a very common standard. I think now that the iPhone has it, you know, this thing happens in smartphones where other phone manufacturers will do something and then the iPhone does it, then it becomes mainstream. I think it's totally going to happen with wireless charging. So I bet, you know, in a year from now when we're revisiting this, these charging pads are just going to be, you know, just all over the place, right? Like, you go buy a new desk from IKEA and it's built into the desk, or you buy a new car and it's built into the console. I think this world is going to be great, and I'm excited as an iPhone user I can finally play in it.
But our Apple Watch won't work on the Qi charging station, or will it?
So there's There's the Qi charging, and then Apple teased, it's not going to be out until next year, something they're calling AirPower, which is like killing me with the names. And it is a superset on this charging standard. So the watch, the iPhone will charge on it, and the Series 3 watch will charge on this. But the Series 3 watch, as far as I know, will not charge on the Belkin thing. So Apple is doing their own proprietary thing on top of the standard if you buy this one product. But the iPhone will work just on any generic charger. So there's a little bit of some fine print there around the Apple Watch. But honestly, you know, the little Apple Watch charging puck, that hasn't changed. You know, I have a little stand on my nightstand. It looks like a tiny rubbery Macintosh. It's adorable. And when my Series 3 watch shows up on Friday, I'll just drop it in there the way I've dropped my Series 2 in it for a year. And, you know, I'll just keep on rolling. I'm not super bummed that, you know, the charging pad on my desk for my phone won't charge my watch. But, you know, well, I guess we'll see in practice how that goes. But at least for me, I just charge my watch at night. I don't ever have to do it in the middle of the day. So I don't think it's a big loss.
Yeah. I mean, I had the first Apple Watch, the OG, as you called it, mm-hmm. and it never yeah. made it through the day. And
yeah, it's,
but this one, yeah, buddy. And I still, I got the bigger version, and mm-hmm. it's so much better. And I just, yeah. I mean, it's usually 65% when I go to bed at night, which is great.
Oh yeah. It's wild how much runoff you have. If you use it for a workout, you'll hit the battery harder, but there are definitely days if I'm just, you know, puttering around my studio. Yeah. I'll take my watch off at night. It'll be 72%. It's like, this is what's wild. Right. And there's some sleep tracking apps now, like Sleep Plus Plus is one that I like. And so I will occasionally sleep with my watch on, just track my sleep every once in a while. But even if you want to do that, it charges so quickly. Put it on the charger when you jump in the shower. And by the time you're out and dressed, it's ready to go again. The Series 2 is really flexible in that way. I think the Series 3 will make that even better.
And have you learned anything helpful from tracking your sleep?
I mean, it just put a number to how poorly I sleep some nights, and so I stopped doing it. I was like, I don't need to know this. Yeah, I already feel it.
That is kind of how I felt as yeah, well. Yeah. Okay, we have one more. This is more of a comment, but it is a little bit of a question. I'm wondering if you know about this. Daniel writes, if you are a voiceover user and you use the Amazon app, you need to know something about the latest version of the app. It appears that Amazon is auto-detecting if you're using voiceover, and if you are, it's limiting the functionality of the app. They're removing Alexa voice features when using the voice search button. So have you heard anything about what, I mean, usually Daniel is has vision issues and has noticed that Apple and Amazon are usually really good with accessibility, but this yeah. is kind of a weird thing going on. Have you read anything about this?
I hadn't come across it until I saw it in our document, and I mean, look, if you're developing an app on iOS, the voiceover tools are so good. There's no excuse to do a poor job of this. Like, just, it is your responsibility as a developer to take full advantage of the accessibility tools Apple gives you, because there are users like Daniel and millions of others who rely on that stuff. There are even people like me who, you know, I don't have any struggles in this area, but even I use the accessibility option on the iPad to turn off promotion because fast frame rates make me feel really strange and sort of uncomfortable. Like, lots of people depend on this stuff. And yeah, so if Amazon has gotten weird with turning that off, or like turning features off in the app if you use voiceover, like, they need to work through that and they need to fix it, because this is super important. Apple gives you the tools to do it. And I would hope that you know, the iOS team at Amazon is addressing this and that they'll fix it, because Daniel's right. Like, that is something that it should not happen. You should have the same experience as much as possible, whether you're heavily using accessibility and voiceover or not. I think it's just basic responsibility of a developer to get that right.
Well, thank you for answering all those questions.
Yeah.
Now it's time for our app cap time. And I warned you, mm-hmm. you're gonna need a hat, and you have a hat. We call it an app cap because it's our favorite app.
I have a hat.
And it rhymes with cap. So,
yeah.
Yeah, oh, and it fits under your headphones.
Yeah, I got my NASA hat. I got the NASA badge.
Oh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I bought that at NASA. I was at Kennedy Space Center a couple summers ago, and I keep my hair short. And after the first, like, 3 hours on the ground, my head was sunburned. And so I went in the gift shop and bought this very expensive NASA hat. but it's great. I love it. So I am prepared now.
Is that a NASA backpack behind you as well?
Yeah, I'm really themed today. Well, it's not a NASA backpack. It just has a patch on it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize that until I set my camera up. I was like, oh, look at that. But I didn't. Yeah, fully. I have a Lego Saturn V back there too. Lots of space stuff in here.
Those are nice backpack hooks too. I have to.
Oh
say.
Yeah, don't mess around.
Yeah, no.
I don't like my studio is very small. I don't like stuff on the floor, and so I actually have those like all around to like hang bags and stuff on, so that they're off the floor and they don't get dusty.
That's nice.
Yeah, those are serious. I bought them at Home Depot. They're not messing around.
Yeah, I like them. All right, so your favorite app right now is what?
This is a super nerdy answer. It's a weather app. And let me preface this a little bit. So I live in Tennessee, and weather here in this part of the country can be severe often. It can change very quickly. And it's something that I like to be abreast of. I like to know what's going on. And so over the years, I don't know how much money I've spent on weather apps. It's shameful, right? Try something, don't like it. Try something, it goes out of business. And for a long time, I used an app by Weather Underground, but they changed some things in the app and it wasn't meeting my needs anymore. And so I went on yet another weather app discovery quest, and I came across Carrot Weather, which has been around for a long time. If you're not familiar with the Carrot family of apps, their whole like hook is that there's like a really strong personality to these apps, and one that I found that I didn't really care for.
They harass you.
It's like, yeah, you open it up and it's like, you know, they're mean to you, or like they're, you know, like, it's kind of gotten in the way, just the way that I feel. And in a recent update, the developer added a toggle to turn it off. And I was like, yes, this app finally is for me. And so I have it on iOS. They have a Mac app as well. What's really great about Carrot Weather is they have what is probably the fastest watchOS app I have ever used. They have a weather complication. It's on my watch face. I can tap it. I can see a forecast. We're all used to, even on a Series 2 watch, you get the spinner for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they've done this. This app is instant on the watch, and it has really made using weather on watchOS like totally usable for me for the first time. Even the Apple Weather complication, which I used for years, doesn't hold a candle to this. The forecasts are great. You can switch between dark sky and Weather Underground. So I prefer Weather Underground data. And what's really cool is you can actually plug in a local weather station ID. So a guy a couple streets over from me has a weather station and I have his ID for it. And so on my watch complication, I know what the weather is two blocks from my house. And in this part of the country, that can be very helpful because it, you know, storm systems come through and it may be raining here, but not east of here. And like, I just know, like, I can look down and I know what's going on where I live. And Carrot Weather makes all that possible. And it's crazy. I mean, I can't overstate how much better on the watch it is than almost any other app. I don't know how they've done it. It's magic. So yeah, Carrot Weather, it's great. It's on, there's a subscription to turn some of that stuff on, like the Weather Underground thing is part of a subscription. But I'm totally willing to pay for it. I can get hyper local weather just on my wrist at all times.
So it's $3.99 just to get the app, and then you pay an mm-hmm. additional subscription.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's like, you know, it's super cheap. It's one of those where like you can do it for a month or a year. Kind of like we're talking about, you know, Nomo Robo, like the value that it gives me is totally worth the, you know, whatever it is, 99 cents a month. I don't even think it's that. So yeah, big thumbs up.
So yeah, that's what I was wondering, when you know, there was all the hurricanes and the storms, and I was thinking like, oh, Carrot Weather, that's an interesting app. Like, is it still calling you a meat bag when it's telling you that you need to evacuate?
Yeah, you can turn that off. Okay. Which is great. So, I was trying to find the subscription pricing, but yeah, that's the nice thing that for me, I just didn't want any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get in and get out, and turning it off is great. But I know almost everyone else who uses Carrot Weather in my circle of friends loves the personality stuff. Like mm-hmm. they find it hilarious, and it's very well done. It's just not for me.
Yes. Me neither. Okay. Well, my app cap is a device and an app. I have a gajillion photos on my iPhone and my iPad, and I'm tired of paying $10 a month to Apple for cloud service. And I recently picked up this Kingston little thumb drive, which is Lightning port, and I love it. This is $60 for 32 gigabytes, and you just plug it in. I can plug it into my iPad or my iPhone through the Lightning port, and which you can see that it's plugged in there, and I let it communicate, and I have this app. And so what I can do here, I can either transfer photos if I just need a backup and I just want to delete some photos, or say I'm on vacation and I just want to put these photos only on my backup, I can do either of those.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I really like it. As an extra backup, like I would never make it my only backup. I guess if there's a situation in which you want to take some photos that you don't want to upload to iCloud for whatever reason, it would also be good for that too. Like maybe you're somewhere buying a gift for
there you go.
Your special someone.
That's a very family friendly example.
You can do that as well. You just click transfer, and I can choose to transfer all my photos. That would take a really long time, or all my photos and videos, just my photos, videos, all my favorites that I favorited, or I can select certain photos. So let's see, I went to the city and I want to select just these many photos I took of the ocean, and then I just hit transfer. And I can either delete them or I can keep them. I'm going to keep them. And then it just transfers. And then they will move over. So, and transfer complete. So it's pretty fast. I mean, that was only four photos. It will take longer if you have more. And then I can view. So these are all my photos on my iPhone. These are all my photos on my iPad. Right now, I'm just using this as another backup. Like I have iTunes, iCloud, and I also have Google Photos. So I wouldn't use this as your only backup, but it's a great, and then you can keep it on your keychain. So, maybe you go somewhere where you're not bringing your iPhone because you have your cellular watch. You can just keep it on your purse or your keychain. And if you want to share photos that way, you can just transfer them to someone else's iPad.
Yeah. I had a situation like that last year. We took a family trip, took a big camera, and I was importing my photos from an SD card onto my iPad. But I didn't have Wi-Fi, right? So I was kind of using my iPad itself as the backup because I couldn't get them to iCloud Photo Library. I could see something like this being great if you're on a long trip. You're just like, I want these on as many devices as possible. That's pretty cool. I'll have to check that out.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not cheap. It's $60 for the 32 gigabyte, and it is $90 for the 64 gigabyte, and $120 for the 128 gigabyte. Do you have a backup, like a physical backup? Where do you backup your stuff?
So I have a whole situation over here. So everything, let's talk about photos. Photos are in iCloud Photo Library. I also upload them to Google Photos like you do. And then I use Time Machine. I use Backblaze. And then my last line of defense, if everything goes terribly wrong, is every couple of weeks I make a full clone of my iMac's hard drive on a hard drive that I keep elsewhere, keep away from the house. And so, if a crater hits my house, then I can go and get that hard drive and have all my stuff, still locally. So, for me with a family and a company and all this stuff, that data is super valuable. So having it on Time Machine drives and a Backblaze and an iCloud and in these offsite backup drives, that may seem like a lot of belt and suspenders, but if I lose that stuff, it's really serious. So yeah, I'm well covered up there, and it's so easy to do now with all these services, and with hard drives are cheap. There's really no excuse not to have a multi-tier backup system.
Yeah, you recommended Backblaze to me, and Leo and I talked about it, and I think it was a couple of weeks ago when we mistakenly said Backblaze was the one that went out of business, but it's not Backblaze that went out of business. Or that didn't go out of business, but had their consumer version turned off.
Yeah, CrashPlan pulled out of the consumer market. They're still around. You can kind of upgrade your account to a business account and just pay them more and you're set. But Backblaze has been around a long time. And, they sponsor Relay, so there's that. But I've used them well before Relay was a thing. And I'm a big fan of it's just about getting your data away from your computer, right? If you have something happened to your house or your office and your only backup is next to your computer, it's not really a backup, right? Because your office burned down and everything's gone. So it's just about getting that data elsewhere, like you said. Have it on your keychain with you all the time. Have it on a server somewhere. It gives you a lot more safety.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on and joining us. You, of course, are one of the founders of Relay FM. I'm going to be on Clockwise tomorrow, one of the Relay FM podcasts, which I love to be on because nobody interrupts each other. It's just 30 minutes, yes. Four topics, and everybody gets their turn.
Just got to remember the order you go in. It's very stressful.
Yes.
No, Clockwise is great. I'll be sure to listen.
But yeah, I really like it. It just, the playground was never like that. No one was taking turns. And so I like to be able to say my piece. So you also, do you appear on other podcasts on other networks or only Relay FM?
All Relay. So I do Connected, which is one of our Apple shows. And then I co-host Liftoff, which is about the space industry. I produce Download for Jason, which is a general tech show. So all over the place on Relay. So doing a whole bunch of stuff.
Awesome. And 512 Pixels. And if you want to relive last year, you can check out the Hiscate video. I'm sure that's still on YouTube.
It is on YouTube. Yep. Sure is.
Awesome. And what's the best place if people just want to follow all your work? Is it 512 Pixels or Relay FM? Where's the best place for people to?
Yeah. I mean, I linked all that stuff on Twitter. So I'm just ISMH. 4 short letters on Twitter, and I kind of linked all the highlights there. So check me out there and be sure to say hey.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. iOS Today records every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. Next week, Georgia Dow will be joining us. And week after that, Leo will be back. And you can subscribe. Please subscribe, even if you like to watch live. We love it when you subscribe to the show. Go to twit.tv/iOS. Subscribe to the video or the audio version. You can use whatever podcast catcher that you use. And we would love for you to subscribe. And until someone tells me differently, subscribe for your friends and family, too. Until someone tells me that's illegal, I'm going to continue recommending that your friends need iOS today as well. We'll see you next week.